If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, I had a guy call me, I have $1 million. I don't give a crap. Like, I got a whole buyer's list of people who are very wealthy and have experience, and I don't know who you are. So gaining the trust of brokers, I think, is huge. You know, you're not just going to call them one time and they're going to send you the best deal.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dave Childers is the CEO and founder of Residential Investment Advisors. They serve the Middle Tennessee area, which for those of you who are familiar, that does comprise Nashville, Spring Hill, Columbia, Murfreesboro, all the way to Cookeville, and markets like that here in Middle Tennessee, which is quite a bit of ground to cover, but they both help investors on the purchase and the sale side of multifamily assets. So today we get to jump in with Dave and hear what it is that he is seeing in these markets and where opportunity lies. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate anybody asking me on these podcasts.
No, man, this is great. This is great. And as I tell, I think I've interviewed two or three other folks here from Tennessee. It's always good to interview fellow Tennesseans.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, you know, the basic flow of the show is always, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there? Can you kind of give us that brief overview?
Yeah. So I started in Nashville. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, started doing real estate, flipping, buying duplexes in 2005, 2006. I was, the ripe old age of 25, 26 when I started doing this, didn't have a clue what I was doing, and have just kind of figured it out throughout the years. So I started buying duplexes, maybe like a lot of people, with partners from California, and my role was kind of the management role. So, you know, I tell people I kind of started syndicating when I was 25, didn't know it was called syndication or joint venturing, but I used my time. They had money. We kind of merged those together. So I started buying duplexes and it scaled up. Now, 15 years later, I've got about a $30 million portfolio with a small group of investors, you know, still actively buying, you know, and selling our own stuff, but also in 2010, we started this brokerage firm. I kind of saw a need here in Nashville for somebody who brokered small to mid-sized multifamily. So I tell people we're kind of a hybrid between a residential agent and a commercial agent. There's this kind of space in there. To date, we're probably closing in about 600 transactions from any, you know, that size. Our geographic location is kind of from Knoxville over to Jackson, Tennessee, and then Hopkinsville, Kentucky, down to Huntsville, and then all places in between. Every small town in Middle Tennessee that has an apartment building or a duplex, I probably know the owner, I've talked to him, or even done a transaction. So that's kind of a quick, you know, overview of where I've gone in the last 15 years as an investor, as a multifamily broker. So learned a lot, so we can dig into that.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. I mean, so if you started off buying your own assets and you see the value of being the buyer, what in your thinking led you to say, all right, now I'm going to broker stuff off? Because most of us have figured out, hey, that if we're going to be the buyer, we're not going to sell off these great deals to somebody else. So why did you open a brokerage?
Great question. And I hear people, wait, I'm waiting for the crash. I'm waiting for the crash, right? That's what I keep hearing. I'm going to wait to buy. People don't understand how bad it was during the crash, and there was no money available. Deals abundant, no money. Unless you were, you know, worth seven figures plus and had liquidity and W-2s, you weren't getting a loan. And that's where I was. I had been a self-employed, you know, real estate investor, agent for 4 or 5 years. No bank was giving me loans on this stuff. I mean, I saw people, I have one client, the story I tell, I had a client buying this great flip house in the middle of all that, and the bank gave him 20%. He had to bring 80% down. Okay. So if you think that, you know, the money's just going to keep flowing and there's going to be this huge abundance of deals, it ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. It didn't happen back then. Real estate was a toxic asset. My banker told me it will be easier, Dave, for me to give you a loan on commercial equipment like bulldozers and kitchen equipment than a cash flowing duplex at that time or small apartment building that still in that time would have been spitting off a 30% cash on cash return with no question. So that's where it kind of like, how do I seize the opportunities and these opportunities I'm seeing because I knew they were opportunities. I just was not prepared to buy them at that point in my career. I was, 27 and I had, $20 million in real estate that I really didn't even know what I was doing at that time. So nobody was giving me more loans, and I hadn't learned about, syndication and raising capital at that point either. So I just said, how can I make money off these deals? Right. And the first logical thing that came to my mind was, hey, let's broker them. And so I found a few very, very well-to-do people that could see what I was seeing, and they just, they started buying up, and, we were selling 60, 70 of these properties every year, and it made me a good living. It kept me in the business. I was kind of at that point in my career where it was like, I have this big, portfolio of multifamily properties that aren't cash flowing just because of where we were and loans and all that. And it was like, I get a day job to support my family, or this is my day job. So I tell people, and even today, like my multifamily, it's a slow cooker. It's a crock pot. It's my retirement fund. This is my day job. A lot of us, in the industry, even if you're a syndicator, your day job is syndicating deals and getting acquisition fee, right? And so if you're not buying more deals, so a lot of people, I don't think that concept. They think they're just going to buy this multifamily and live off the cash flow. Mostly in this market, it doesn't happen. So this is my day job. This is what pays my, my payments on my fun toys and my living expenses.
Right. No, that's interesting. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Yeah. For those of us who are active syndicators, that is, that is our day job, is acquiring more deals. We're all working, and that's not necessarily a negative thing. The Nashville market has exploded in the last, 7-8 years now.
Yeah.
Walk us through what that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, so back to 2009, 2010, I was selling duplexes for $70,000 in East Nashville that were, at that time, we're bringing in maybe $700 a side. So, right, $70,000 duplex, bringing in $1,400, cash on cash was 30%. Now those duplexes, we're getting ready to actually list a huge portfolio for a client. Those duplexes are $399 now, $400,000. And they're bringing in 1200, maybe a unit, 1100, so 2400 on a 399. But what's happening, and so when we were in this business, back to the cash flow, we were selling on cash flow. It was like, go run your numbers and tell me what you can pay for it, because this is going to be a 25 or 30%. And that's what we were selling, cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. Never in our mind would we think a duplex in that area of town would be worth $400,000, right? We never sold it that way. We just sold it as like, hey, buy these and, a couple of years, it's paid for itself.
Sure.
And so now we're seeing, again, just the explosion of growth in Nashville. That duplex is worth $400 because of the dirt, right? Somebody will probably pay $399 for that duplex to bulldoze it and build two, tall and skinnies on that lot. And that dirt's worth it because those will sell for, $600,000 each in that part of town. And the scarcity of those lots, has just driven those prices up. So if you're an investor looking for maybe cash flow in multifamily, Nashville's, the core is not your place. And so that's what we're doing right now. But yeah, Nashville's just exploded. I mean, I think I just saw, this is being recorded on the 20th of January. U-Haul just said, I think we are the number one, state for U-Haul trucks coming into Tennessee. So, and what we've seen now is, I call it the Nashville effect, right? Now a radius of 40 miles around Nashville, it's exploded. Some of these small towns, people are having to go further and further out to find affordable housing, which again has just pushed those rents, up in some of these small surrounding communities.
Right. How do you decide then what you want to hold and what you want to broker?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I get that a lot. Joe Fairless and I talked about that. I broker smaller stuff than I'm buying. So I'm not in the market right now for a two unit or a five unit or a 25 unit. I'm looking for 50 and above, probably 50 to 100. And I've had to be very careful with that. I tell people I disqualify myself automatically when somebody calls us to broker. So if somebody calls and says, hey, Dave, I want to sell my 50 unit or 30 unit, I just automatically disqualify myself. And I think I've built that reputation over 10 years of I'm not competing against you buying this if I got an incoming call to broker something.
You're saying if somebody wants to list an asset with you, you're not going to make an offer on it?
No, I can't. Because when they make that first phone call, they're disclosing, they're pretty much kind of putting me in that, fiduciary responsibility of being their broker, telling them what I can get for the property. And those numbers might be different, right? What I want to pay for it and what I think it will sell for. I'm not going to pay $399 for a duplex downtown in East Nashville. my offer would have been different. So, you know, it's been one of those things where, you know, now I've got three agents working for me. I'm kind of trying to pull myself back from the brokerage firm, raise capital, look at bigger deals. But, you know, we're looking at deals. I've got one down in Pensacola, Florida that I bought 4 years ago. I'd love to add to my portfolio down there. We've looked at, you know, just other markets. I wear the hat of a broker, but then I wear the hat of a buyer as well. So I'm, you know, I'm calling on brokers, trying to get brokers to send me deals, get on their list, you know, doing all the same things that, you know, we try to teach our clients how to get on our list. So it's interesting some days, let's just say.
Right, right. I think that would take a lot of discipline to pass, you know, if somebody called you with a 50 or 100 unit building and they said, hey, this is what we're thinking. I mean, the opportunist in most of us would probably be like, well, I can buy that from you.
Well, and there's been a lot of brokers from, firms in the past that have kind of tried to do that and they gain that reputation and it ruins them. And so I know a lot of good ones there that, you know, the ones I've learned from, the best of the business, I feel like kind of take my stance, like anything that, you know, is on our plate to broker, we just, you know, as much as we want to be part of it, you know, we just can't, because it would just one of those doing that one time could just ruin, I guess, our reputation,
right,
for the long term. So it's just not worth it.
Yeah, and people could always accuse you of, you know, some sort of manipulation or something else. I mean, there's plenty of real estate commissions who are more than happy to find fault where there was none and assess large fines that maybe just aren't worth the juice and worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. What are some things that you see buyers doing or sellers doing either correctly or incorrectly right now that they could help kind of improve this process?
You know, we're different than maybe your large national ones because we deal with a lot of mom and pops, right? So, I mean, we see it all. I mean, we see, you know, these mom and pops that this don't keep records, don't have leases, their documentation, it's a nightmare. We're having to create P&Ls for them. We're having to give them leases. We're having to, you know, try to clean up all their stuff before we take it to the market or during the due diligence time. I don't have leases on those 10 units. Oh, by the way, I've never been in those 10 units and you can't get into them either. We were working with a seller out of Jackson and, you know, we put the properties under contract for a buyer and he said, well, they can't inspect them. I didn't do that when I bought them. Why would a buyer want to come and walk all the units? So, you know, very, very unsophisticated, which is fine. I mean, we've done this long enough that we kind of, you know, take that handholding process and we really do enjoy that, you know, helping them out. And that's kind of makes what makes us different is I think I can almost foresee those problems coming. So we try to jump ahead of them. We've got on our website buyers and sellers guides, things that you need to have. Buyers, you know, again, you know, they've gone to too many seminars. They've listened to too many podcasts, no offense, but you know, I'm only going to buy on actuals and, estoppel notice. I need an estoppel notice and all this, you know, and a garbage. I'm like, man, we will help you, you know, but you got to trust that we are here to assist you in this transaction. You know, we, again, built our reputation on, you know, really helping people. I tell people I have a vested interest that you're successful, right? I want you to buy from us and keep buying from us. So I don't want to pull the wool over your eyes one time and get you to buy something. You know, we're looking to build long-term relationships with people. So those people that, you know, come with that kind of, you know, want to learn attitude to us are the type of people we're really looking for. And we can kind of pick and choose. I think that's a lot of things that buyers think that they're the only ones that have money or they're the only ones looking at this. And you kind of laugh, you know. I used to go, you know, I had a guy call me, I have $1 million. I don't give a crap. Like I got a whole buyer's list of people who are very wealthy and have experience and I don't know who you are. So gaining the trust of brokers, I think is huge. You know, you're not just going to call them one time and they're going to send you the best deal, right? Building relationships. Right now, I'm trying to teach my agents to get on the phone, really understand what buyers are wanting. And some of these buyers are just like, well, I don't have time to do phone calls with you. Just send me your deals, right? Well, they're not going to get our deals. I mean, we don't even know what they're looking for. We don't even know who they are. And you're asking us to trust our paycheck to you that you won't even spend 15 minutes getting to know us on a phone call. You know, those are kinds of things that we see constantly. And that's fine. I mean, if you you don't have enough business sense to start building relationships with people, you know, you're just going to go, you know, into the masses on an email list and, you know, you'll never, you know, see those off market deals that we get first.
Right. No, that's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. That, I can only imagine, you know, especially coming from a broker's perspective. You know, everybody's got their own kind of, I don't even know how to put it, pet peeves in the industry, but that sounds like that's one that as buyers that we could do a better job of, like you said, you know, spend time on the phone with you. What are some other things that we could do to improve the buyer broker relationship? Or if I wanted to start a new relationship with you, other than spending 15 minutes on the phone and kind of telling you what I'm thinking, how do you quote unquote develop that relationship, as you call it?
I mean, I think follow up, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I have people that will call me, you know, one time a year. And again, they expect me to just, you know, remember that they're looking for that type of asset. And then, you know, and I don't know, you know, everybody, timing is huge in this business, right? A guy that has a bunch of money today might not have it tomorrow. He, you know, something might've come up in his business. I mean, it just, it's ever flowing and ever changing. So just letting me know, hey, I've got money. I'm selling this. I'm refinancing this. I'm going to have this capital, you know, helping us. You know, we're always trying to advise people just to like, get with us and let us help you plan, right? So if you're getting ready to sell, contact us now a year in advance and say, hey, what do I need to do to clean up my books? Or, you know, are there any improvements? Or if you're looking to buy in the next 6 months, hey, here, you know, I'm getting ready to do this cash out refinance. I'm going to have a bunch of capital. You know, here's what I'm looking at. And we will help you. You know, we just connect people and properties, right? So I was just showing my agents this the other day, we got a long list of off-market and on-market properties, and we have all these buyers, and we're just trying to connect everything and connect dots. And so, you know, the more you can help us, you know, really narrow in what you're looking for or what you're trying to do, you know, in the future with planning is a key as well, I believe.
Right. That's great advice. That's great advice. So yeah, I mean, because a lot of times that is exactly what we think. We're like, oh, well, I talked to Dave, you know, 3 months ago, he should remember. And that's just not going to happen.
You know, even from podcasts like this, we get people, I mean, you know, leads after leads after leads every week. You know, we put on a lot of meetups. If you're ever in Middle Tennessee, we do a lot of meetups. You know, we'll have 50 people tonight at our meetup probably. And they're all looking for property, right? I mean, I'm getting, you know, so we're getting bombarded. So again, you know, come, you know, make the effort to get to know us, right? You know, come to our office, meet with my team. Those are all things that are going to kind of put you at the front of the list and at the front of our minds when that asset that, you know, works for you perfectly pops up.
Right. And in its own right, it's kind of a backwards business relationship.
It absolutely is backwards. Everybody thinks that I'm the buyer, I'm the customer. You got to flip that thinking completely around. And essentially, and I'm telling you this because I do it, wine and dine that broker. He can make you a ton of money. I can't mention his name on this call, but $700 million of multifamily last year. He said that to me. That agent that you're talking about, he can make you a ton of money, right? So, you know, I have to wine and dine him. I have to, you know, get him to think that I'm the best buyer. I'm the guy that's going to, you know, protect his commission. I'm not going to jerk him around during due diligence. And so you really have to flip that thinking around in this market, right? That's the kind of market we're in right now. Maybe if the market changes, the rules reverse. But right now, in where we are in multifamily investing nationwide, I absolutely think that's the case.
Yeah, were buyers and credit to dry up and buyers weren't a dime a dozen, then maybe, like you said, that role may flip. But as it is right now, it sounds like there's way more buyers than there are good deals out there. You're going to have to make yourself stand out. Like it or not, that your acquisition or your purchase covers that broker's paycheck. That's irrelevant.
Another thing too, it's not always about the you know, you were the highest offer. You know, right. The buyer is not always the highest offer. It's the guy that we know can get it done. He's got his banking lined up. He's got, you know, references. He's organized. I can call and check on his lending. I know he's got property management. I know he has experience. I know he has localized knowledge. He's got a team in place. All those kinds of things go into, you know, helping us or the seller make a decision on who they're, you know, what offer they're going to choose, or even if they're going to work with you at period.
Right. Yeah. And if you're listening to this, rewind this 20 seconds and listen to what Dave just said and write all those things down, because those are all things that will help you get this deal across the finish line and put you really ahead of the pack. Dave, let's jump into the final four here if we can. Take everything you know, distill it down to one piece of advice. You're giving it to an aspiring investor. What would that piece of advice be?
You know, I don't always think bigger is better. I would much rather own a 50-100 unit all by myself than do these huge syndications. I see a lot of people putting time and effort into a little tiny piece of that sliver. And so, you know, I'd say, you know, come back, look at some of these smaller deals. I think, A, you know, you own more of it, and B, you don't have to, you know, work with, you know, fellow investors as much. And, you know, more people you get in the pool, you know, it's difficult, you know, making business decisions with partners. So I would say, you know, step back and look at some of these smaller deals that maybe you can take down with, you know, less people.
Right. No, I love that. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Educate yourself. You know, I have something I didn't do in the beginning that I wish I would have is spend the money on coaching or mastermind groups or, you know, any kind of networking things that you can get your hands on, just absorb, be a sponge. You know, 15 years into this, I still, you know, I'm doing all of that stuff. Business coaching, you know, the next generation for me, and I'm also receiving coaching all the time.
Right. No, that's great. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Oh man, treat, you know, I think this kind of goes with our multifamily. Take good care of your tenants. You know, we have, you know, canceled and not work with slumlords, right? I want to see my landlords, my investors, and myself take really good care of tenants. I think they deserve that. I don't think there should be, you know, I think the laws should be there, but I think we should go above and beyond of taking care of these tenants that have taken care of us and helped create my wealth.
Right. No, that's absolutely true and awesome. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we go about doing that?
Yeah. So RIA-INC.com. So RIA-Inc.com. Go there. You can listen to all the podcasts I've been on. All my contact information's on there. I always do this ever since I think Rod Cleef was the first podcast I did almost 5 years ago. Give out my personal cell phone number at 615-479-8737. Feel free to reach out to me, text, you know, call. I will get back to you, you know, within 48 hours or somebody on my team if you're looking for multifamily around here. You know, again, if you're in the Middle Tennessee area, I'd love to connect with you. We're doing meetups all the time. We have one tonight in Brentwood. Always bring in speakers or always doing everything educational. You know, you'll walk away with some kind of nugget of knowledge. So again, call my cell phone, 615-479-8737.
Awesome. Dave, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.